2 weeks ago, if you were here, we heard in Matthew's Gospel reading how the Pharisees set out to try and trap Jesus over whether to pay taxes to Caesar or not. They began that conversation by saying, "Teacher, we know you are a man of integrity and that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. What an extraordinary thing for your enemy to say to you. And how honoured and humbled any one of us would be if anybody should say something like that to us." Someone who has integrity and speaks God's truth always is a diamond through and through. No camouflage, no compromising the truth for an easy life, no self-interest at the expense of others, and no one-day-a-week holiness. Unlike the Pharisees and the scribes, who were more concerned about appearances and honour for themselves. Paul, in the New Testament, was a man who modelled himself on the integrity of Jesus. He told God's truth in spite of the consequences. Paul visited Thessalonica on his second missionary journey, having been hounded out of Philippi. Together with Silas, he became a friend and brother to the Thessalonians, as well as their preacher and teacher, showing them by example what it looked like to be a follower of Jesus and pointing them away from himself to God. A parent driving to an adventure park breaks the speed limit with his children sitting in the back. The speed limit is clearly signposted on the road. And one of the children pipes up, "Dad, you're breaking the limit." Dad replies, "Only just a bit, but you want to beat the cues, don't you? You've been nagging me all morning. Anyway, when you drive, you jolly well obey the speed limit." Do as I say, not as I do. Probably familiar if any of us are parents, grandparents, or carers, or teachers. We will have heard, or even said ourselves, "Because I say so," to a defiant child who's disobeying you again. Perhaps our own parents said the same things to us. Nowadays, it's more likely, "You're not going out until you tidy your room," when the parents' room is an absolute disgrace. "No phones at the table," says Mum, and then takes a work call at the table. It's actually of much more consequence when it's a spiritual teacher in charge of those who need to learn their faith. A preacher, rabbi, or teacher of the law, charged with guiding the people in faith and life, or a prophet who claims to have the words of God. In that passage we heard from Micah, our first reading, the false prophets were condemned for prioritizing the rich people over the poor, telling the wealthy ones exactly what they wanted to hear and proclaiming their prophecies for money. At the same time, being ultra strict and harsh on the poor people who couldn't pay them. Outrage is aimed at rulers governing for bribes and the priests too, preaching for a fee, something Methodists don't do. Methodist preachers preach for love of God. Materialism and personal gain was rampant even then. They believed God would look after them, whatever they did and however they behaved. Micah predicts how very wrong they are and that destruction is coming because of their disobedience. He could not stand by and be silent. He had to advocate for the poor who were suffering at the hands of those powerful leaders. In Matthew 23, we hear Jesus telling the disciples and the crowds that there is nothing wrong with the law in itself. The problem is with the behavior of those who teach the law, saying one thing but doing another, demanding of others a standard they did not apply to themselves. Our reading this morning stopped at verse 12, according to the lectionary, but in verse 13, Jesus calls them hypocrites. In Greek, the word hypocrisis translates as actor, playing a part. They were fastidious about certain things like ritual purity and food laws, but their concentration was on strict adherence to the external practices, the observance of these rules of the law. But they actually lost the point of why. Why were they doing these things? They wanted to be seen to be holy and righteous and a cut above the common people. Hence the wearing of large phylacteries. It said boxes, they're actually called phylacteries. It was a box that was strapped with leather strapping around the arm and on the forehead. And inside these little boxes was the Shema, which was the prayer every Jewish man said morning and night. And I expect you know it, we heard a bit of it last week. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. The instruction in Deuteronomy, it appears in Deuteronomy and Leviticus, was keep these words in your heart, recite them to your children, bind them as a sign on your hand, fix them as an emblem on your forehead, and write them on the doorposts of your house. The Jews needed reminding to be conscious of God's rule and reign in their lives in order to live according to God's will. That's why there was this instruction. As Micah put it in chapter 6, verse 8, it was in order that they would act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with their God. The scribes and Pharisees of Jesus' day took the instruction of wearing these little bits of the law on their arms and their foreheads literally. So they made the boxes as big as it could possibly be, much larger than necessary, and very impressive, and actually very uncomfortable. If you can imagine having a box stuck on your forehead with straps all the way up your arm and this thing on your head, it was definitely uncomfortable. And it's actually where the phrase wearing your heart on your sleeve comes from, which is interesting. They wore their fringes ostentatiously long. They had prayer shawls, and on the corner of the prayer shawl, the four corners, were these long tassels, these fringes. And they too were to remind them of the commandments. So the Pharisees and scribes made them extra long and extra fancy. But the motivation for doing so had become so distorted, it was to gain attention. It was for everyone to look at them and show how holy they were. It was actually self-pride and self-admiration. They had a great deal of religious and social power over the people, judging, restricting and controlling and glorying in it. But their behavior was devoid of care or love. The very commandment they carried round on their bodies and showed off. They'd ignored the part that says in Leviticus 19, and love your neighbor as yourself. Sometimes we think Jesus sort of added this, he didn't. It's in the law, love God first and love your neighbor as yourself. The scribes and the Pharisees had chosen to omit that part. The gospel Jesus came to preach was God's way, a way of humility and service, borne out by the way he lived. And his followers were to learn that way from him. The only power Jesus subscribed to was the power of love. In the face of injustice, he not only spoke, but acted. The power of love is something we all have. We do not use it well if we remain silent and inactive when we see someone hurt or humiliated or unjustly treated. We do use it well if whatever position or authority we hold, at home, at work, in the church, while volunteering, or anywhere, is for the benefit of others, to act with kindness, consideration, and deflecting praise away from ourselves and towards God. Sadly, there are many examples of Christians not practicing what they preach, as you will find in any religion. And it's noticed, sometimes really harmfully to the church, by family, friends, neighbours, and complete strangers. You will probably have heard of the Christian Resources Exhibition, which is held every year in various locations around the country. It's a lovely thing to go to if you ever have the chance, with stalls of just about anything to do with the Christian faith. And on one occasion, there was a stall holder on a charity stall next door to a stand where there were hand-embroidered vestments. I've actually seen one of these stands, absolutely extraordinary work. Very often the person who has done the embroidery is there selling these extraordinary garments. There was a clergyman drooling over the fabrics and discussing the virtues of watered silk as against brocade. Which would be the most impressive for the lighting in the chancel? Other young clergy at the very same stand were in conversation with each other as to the title they preferred. Would it be Father, Mother, Reverend, Rector, or simply Vicar? But if you were in the press, which would be the most, well, important? The stallholder overhearing this was deeply saddened. Jesus points out the danger of glorying in titles. He says to the disciples and the crowds not to use the titles rabbi, teacher, leader, or even father. He says we have one teacher, one father, one leader, which echoes the Shema, the Lord is one. We might think this is a rather strange verse to have in our Bibles, never to call anybody father, because we do, and teacher, because we do, and, well, anything else, we sort of do. But Jesus is making an extreme point. God is the supreme authority, the one who leads, guides, and parents, and from whom we take our lead. All of us are to remember we are learners and disciples, whatever position we hold. Those with authority must lead by example in humility and service. As a minister, preacher, teacher, parent, carer, friend, all of us are to remember that we learn together under the headship of Christ. That our role is to point the way to God, not to fulfill our own ambitions or our own satisfaction or to be impressive. Only this week I saw a post on Facebook from a URC minister friend who is currently serving with CWM in Fiji. And he put up this post. Leader is mentioned only 6 times in the Bible. Servant is mentioned 900 times. Why do we have so many leadership conferences? What a good question. If they were called servanthood conferences, would anybody come? One wonders. The great apostles, the saints, the bishops and the priests, leaders of every denomination now, are all, were all, will be all children of God, the family of Jesus, all called to be servants to one another, not to draw attention to themselves, but to God. And that goes for every Christian in every church and nation. One anotherness is a phrase that has been coined by some American churches, a reminder that we are all learners together. Human nature is very keen on ego. Our culture and society are all about self-fulfillment and self-satisfaction. To be content with our identity as a child of God rather than as a person of rank, education, a certain country, privilege, wealth, or importance is a lifelong learning curve for most of us. To remember constantly that it is God we serve in every thought, word, and action is a huge challenge. To genuinely want for our neighbour, whoever that might be, what we desire most for ourselves is deeply demanding. What Jesus wants from his disciples, and that means all of us, is authenticity, honesty, humility, and service, and to simply do our very best. Those qualities dethrone any power over others. The Brazilian spiritual author Paulo Coelho wrote, "The world is changed by your example, not by your opinion." And Martin Luther King taught that power without love is reckless and abusive, and love without power is sentimental and anemic. Power at its best is love implementing the demands of justice, and justice at its best is power correcting everything that stands against love. There are a lot of thoughts there, I am well aware. In fact, when I found it, I read it 6 times. It's deep. But I think it's something we could well do to have written up somewhere in our churches. Most importantly, power without love is reckless and abusive. May we all disciple together, learning from one another as children of the same Heavenly Father, so that each of us develops more of a servant heart. And it's a life's work, leading others to God through his love for us. Amen.